We started to introduce more and more of our original songs that we had started writing together in our traditional classical music concerts. And I think it started to get a little bit confusing. I think there was a point where Laurie would be doing arias and then we'd do something called Nose Job.
Your nose makes a statement and shows who you are. So wear it very proudly, don't you ever think of getting that nose job.
She wrote six operas, many chamber ensemble works, and in 1891 wrote the Mass in D.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. India's top court affirms trans people, Ethiopia eschews Africa's trending homophobia, and Pure Land sings out as the girls they are. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Sarah Sweeney.
And I'm Ryan Pest.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending April 19th, 2014. India's highest court has ordered sweeping changes to improve the lives of the country's estimated 3 million hijras, or transgender women, whom the court formally identified this week as a third gender. A two-judge panel of the Apex Court ruled that the country's constitution allows individuals to choose the gender they most identify with on official documents. The judges also said that the state is bound to take some affirmative action for transgender advancement so that the injustice done to them for centuries could be remedied, and required access by transgender people to government benefits that are given to what are known as socially and educationally backward classes. The landmark ruling came as a bit of a surprise. A decision by another two-judge panel of the High Court in December overturned a 2009 lower court ruling declaring the British colonial era law against unnatural sex, Penal Code Section 377, to be unconstitutional. The High Court reversal essentially recriminalized private, consensual adult gay sex in the world's second most populous country. Activists filed what's known as a curative petition with the Apex Court last week, asking senior judges to review that decision. Since Parliament seems unlikely to repeal Section 377, it's the last chance in the foreseeable future to have the law overturned.
One of the world's most famous transgender people, U.S. Army Private Chelsea Manning, lost her initial appeal this week of the conviction and 35-year prison sentence she was given for passing along to WikiLeaks thousands of classified government documents. It's been described as the biggest security breach in U.S. history. The native of Crescent, Oklahoma, known as Bradley Manning before identifying as trans, was sentenced in August for leaking more than 700,000 secret military and State Department documents and battlefield videos to the anti-secrecy website while serving in Iraq in 2009 and 2010. She was acquitted of the most serious charge against her, however, aiding the enemy. Manning's supporters call her a brave whistleblower who was trying to expose what she believed to be illegal acts by the U.S. government. Manning's detractors call her a traitor. The Associated Press reported that the approval of the conviction and sentence by Major General Jeffrey S. Buchanan, commander of the Military District of Washington, automatically sends Manning's case to the Army Court of Criminal Appeals.
Malta's parliament doubled up on LGBT liberation this week. Lawmakers amended the Mediterranean island nation's constitution to ban bias against transgender people and passed legislation to create marriage-like civil unions for same-gender couples that also includes adoption rights. Hundreds cheered, hugged, and kissed during a celebration in the heavily Roman Catholic nation's capital of Valletta, minutes after passage was announced. The city's palace square was lit up in rainbow colors. Malta becomes the 22nd European country to legally recognize same-gender unions and the 10th to allow joint adoption.
The tide of homophobia appears to have been stemmed, at least for now, in Ethiopia. The government has backed away from calls for increased penalties for private consensual adult same-gender sex. Offenders are already punished with up to 15 years in prison. Information Minister Redwan Hussein told Agence France-Presse this week that it is not a serious crime, plus it is not as widespread as some people suggest. The law is already there and there is no way that we are going to tamper with it. Inspired by the passage of harsh anti-gay laws in Nigeria and Uganda, religious groups linked to the Ethiopian Orthodox Church that have called gay people dangerous and warned that they rape children have abandoned plans for a massive anti-gay march on April 26th in the capital city of Addis Ababa. According to some reports, the cancellation came after people inside the church asked the government to stop the event.
But Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe renewed his attacks on sexual minorities this week during ceremonies at Harare's National Sports Stadium, marking the 34th anniversary of the Southern African nation's independence from Great Britain. "Human rights cannot derive from acts which are inhuman," he said. "We did not fight for this Zimbabwe so it can be a homosexual territory." Mugabe, who's infamously called gays and lesbians less than dogs and pigs, added that, "If there are any diplomats who will talk of any homosexuality, just tell me. We will kick them out of the country without any excuse. We won't even listen."
Some prominent human rights activists in Uganda have vowed to stay and fight the increasingly anti-gay atmosphere in their country, following enactment in February of the Anti-Homosexuality Act, commonly referred to as the Jail the Gays Bill. Many people advocating for LGBT rights, or even just providing health care services to HIV and AIDS patients, which may now be considered illegal under Ugandan law, are in hiding after receiving death threats or learning that they're being sought by police. The Advocate reported this week that the Urgent Action Fund, a women's rights group, has initiated a new fundraising campaign to make immediate grants to those who desperately need financial assistance to flee Uganda and relocate in more accepting locales. But Namibia won't be one of them. The country's Commissioner for Refugees, Nkrumah Mashilanga, told the Namibian Sun newspaper this week that "our domestic refugee law does not have a provision granting refugee status for being gay, and we will never do that." Sex between men is illegal in Namibia and can be punished by lengthy prison terms.
The United Nations is sounding the alarm about a new law in Brunei that punishes consensual adult gay sex with death by stoning. The law takes effect this week. Rape, adultery, extramarital sexual relations by Muslims, insulting the Quran, and murder are the other offenses for which the death penalty could be applied under the revised penal code. Same-gender sex has long been a crime in Brunei, but until now, the maximum punishment has been 10 years in prison. The Southeast Asian nation is a Muslim monarchy that gained independence from Great Britain in 1984. Under Brunei's constitution, Sultan Muda Hassanal Bolkiah is the ruling head of state. He also serves as prime minister, finance minister, and defense minister. Rupert Colville of the Office of UN High Commissioner for Human Rights told a news conference that, under international law, stoning people to death constitutes torture or other cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment or punishment, and is thus clearly prohibited.
In other news, the 10th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals considered its second marriage equality case in as many weeks on April 17th. A three-judge panel heard oral arguments on Oklahoma's challenge to a lower federal court ruling that declared the state's ban on civil marriage for same-gender couples unconstitutional. Reports from last week's arguments in a similar case involving Utah's ban before the same three-judge panel predicted a 2-to-1 split in favor of overturning that state's ban. U.S. Circuit Judge Jerome Holmes is also seen as a swing vote in the Oklahoma case. It might be months before written decisions are issued. Most observers believe the final word on marriage equality will have to come from the Supreme Court.
Several Utah couples who legally wed when it was possible during a brief period in December have also filed second parent adoption applications. But the Utah Attorney General's office has asked the state high court to deny orders from judges who've already approved those adoptions, at least until the marriage equality case is resolved. An editorial in the Salt Lake Tribune charged Utah officials with having gone from mainstream conservative to merely retrograde to downright nasty.
Lawmakers in Louisiana bowed to pressure from conservative Christian groups this week and refused to repeal the state's anti-sodomy law, even though such laws were declared unconstitutional by the U.S. Supreme Court's Lawrence v. Texas decision in 2003. The Louisiana Family Forum, reportedly the state's largest lobbying group, sent a letter to every lawmaker asserting that the anti-sodomy statute is consistent with the values of Louisiana residents who consider this behavior to be dangerous, unhealthy, and immoral. Even though the statute is unenforceable, the letter also warned that it was needed to protect young people from sexual predators.
But finally, supporters of LGBT rights are emerging in the state of Mississippi, named in a study conducted last year by the New York Times as the most anti-gay state in the union. As if to prove the point, Republican Governor Phil Bryant signed a so-called religious freedom bill into law last week that allows businesses and individuals to refuse service to anyone if doing so places an undue burden on their right to the exercise of religion. It was overwhelmingly approved by the Republican-dominated legislature. Opponents called the measure a veiled anti-LGBT license to discriminate. And in a campaign initiated by the advocacy group Equality Mississippi, hundreds of businesses and shops across the state are displaying window stickers the organization is distributing for free that assure LGBT people that their business is welcome. "We don't discriminate," the sticker reads. "If you're buying, we're selling."
That's News Wrap for the week ending April 19th, 2014. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Gray Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Sarah Sweeney.
And I'm Ryan Pest.
A quick clarification in our reporting about India's Supreme Court third gender ruling. It applies to all trans people, not just trans women. You'll be among the first to hear a celebrated musical lesbian duo playing in a new key. But first, a reminder that composing women have long been an imposing force for freedom.
Ethel Smith, English composer and suffragist, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Ethel Smith was born in England in 1858. At 19, a boundless love of music landed her at the Leipzig Conservatory in Germany, befriending Peter Tchaikovsky. Smith went on to become the most important female composer in early 20th century English music. She wrote 6 operas, many chamber ensemble works, and in 1891 wrote the Mass in D. Tending toward grand romantic passions, most of them with women, she became involved in the women's suffrage movement, even composing its anthem, March of the Women. Once arrested during a suffragist demonstration, Smith spent 3 months in prison. Loyal supporters arrived and marched around the prison courtyard singing her march song as she conducted them with a toothbrush from her prison cell window. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Karen Burns.
Hi, this is Janice Ian, and you're listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine.
A blind lesbian opera singer is pretty unique, but Laurie Rubin and her professional and life partner Jenny Tyra are taking on another musical genre. As Pure Land, the duo is exploring pop music with a message. They discuss their new direction for the first time with This Way Out correspondent Abby Dees after a taste of their new single, The Girl I Am.
But in your presence it was clear that I was on my own. There I stood, a normal girl with teenage hopes and dreams. But superimposed upon my image was a shadow dark and mean. You were cool, so I thought you'd change their minds. You'd show that I was their kind. joined them to talk boys and to play with their hair. You treated me like I didn't matter, like I wasn't even there. Don't tell me what I deserve. This is how my life should be. Don't try to shape the girl that I am. I thought I had led right, and still you make me bleed.
And in studio, ready to play some more of their new stuff, is Pure Land, which is way better than just getting to hear the CD. Is this, am I wrong? Is this your first live or sort of live appearance as Pure Land?
Yes.
Yes.
As a duo, yes.
What else is on the agenda for you?
Right now, I think because we just have our video out for the first single, we have that and we have the single out, we're actually sort of just going to let that sort of age, I guess, like good wine. And once the album comes out in September, I think that's when we're going to really do our big tour. We're going to do concerts in LA, San Francisco, and New York, and Philadelphia.
Are you hoping to get some of your opera fans listening, or is this just a whole new thing for both of you?
I think it's a bit of both. I think it is definitely new for both of us, although we have been performing The Girl I Am acoustically. So it's kind of like one of those things, like people used to ask us, do you feel different now that you're married, you know, now that you're wife and wife? And it's like, well, we've been together for so long that, you know, it doesn't really feel different. I think a lot of our, quote, opera fans hopefully will make the transition with us for sure.
What prompted the official creation of Pure Land?
We started to introduce more and more of our original songs that we had started writing together in our traditional classical music concerts. And I think it started to get a little bit confusing. I think there was a point where Lori would be doing arias, and then we'd do something called nose job. And
then, guitar.
You know, so we realized that we'd have to have like a separate branding to kind of organize the whole thing in our minds and for audience to make it clear.
Do you have a strong lesbian fan base?
When we were in San Francisco, I think we sort of were adopted by the lesbian community there. It was really awesome because a lot of people came out to our concerts and there were all these wonderful lesbian couples. And prior to that, one of the things that actually surprised me was when my memoir came out, the blind community was really excited. The Jewish community was very excited. And the LGBT community, I guess they have so many celebrities, you know, that they're like, who's this, you know, who's this Jewish blind opera singer? But now I think, hopefully, I think because of The Girl I Am, we actually feature a story about a lesbian couple being cyberbullied in the video. So I think because of the message in the video, I think that the LGBT community might come forward and start being kind of excited about what we're doing.
And you're talking about the song The Girl I Am, which it is dealing with those issues of making people feel small.
Right. A couple of years ago, way before the whole idea of Pure Land was born, Jenny had suggested, why don't we write a song about this? And let's make it the kind of song that teenagers will want to listen to and you know, that it'll make them feel better. So she waited for me to write out those lyrics. And it took me, like, as soon as we got inspired, I mean, it took me all of maybe 5 minutes and I got them out. And then
it was right there.
It was just right there. I think it was just waiting to come out. So one of the things I always tell kids is, you know, when things suck, just think it'll turn into great art.
You know, or a really good story. So you've also got this video coming out for The Girl I Am.
Yeah.
Well, the exciting thing about our video is that it features our students from, we have a performing arts program in Hawaii. It's called Ohana Arts, and it's a summer performing arts music, theater, dance program. And it features our students, and they basically are acting out 6 different scenes of bullying in the video.
The funny thing is that they are so not like that, well, at least at our program. They're so, in fact, a lot of them have to play mean girls, you know? And they were all saying, oh my God, people really do this? And we're like, yeah. And they're like, oh my God. You know, they were so upset that they were actually acting out things that really do happen. They were hoping that this was just stuff that happens in movies, you know?
Oh, that they just heard about this. That's sort of heartbreaking and wonderful at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
Jenny, you wrote the music for that song. Were you feeling this kind of stuff? Like, what was driving you as you were writing the music?
At that time, it was mostly the frustration of watching how difficult the kinds of things that she was facing in terms of what the way that other people were misidentifying her. At that time, I was like, you should write a book and we should write a song, you know, that all these different things just to kind of, I wanted to help find ways that we could just express that she's a normal person and, you know, you don't need to treat her like she's made of ice, and yeah. I'm not her nurse.
Yes. You know what? I do remember this, Laurie. You talked about this a little bit in your book. Your relationship has really brought up a lot of issues around disability,
yes.
around sexual orientation, mm-hmm. around racism.
Right.
And I was wondering if you guys could talk about that.
Well, it's frustrating for me because I never even thought about it when we first got together. I just thought, wow, you know, I found this amazing person. And one thing that I always loved and admired about Jenny was that she was one of the few people who assumed that I could do everything. And it's not even like I could do everything in my career. It was like the everyday stuff, like clean a toilet, cook dinner, take care of a child. And those are the kinds of things that, you know, people always assumed I'd have a normal life in terms of like a career, because when you sing, all you have to do is open your mouth and sing. But when it came down to it, even my own family, they were scared to have me hold a knife and they were scared to have me buy a hot stove. And so it was really nice having somebody near me who even thought I could do all the mundane things as well as the other stuff too. But then when we started to actually be in a relationship together, and I wouldn't say close friends, but a lot of our acquaintances would start treating depending if it was my acquaintances, they would treat Jenny like, get me a glass of water or there was one time that happened in a professional sort of situation and it was just mind boggling, or they were afraid to ask us to go to have drinks with them at a bar because I don't know what it is about blind people and bars, but they don't think we mesh. I don't know why. So there were a lot of social dissonances that we experienced, and I think Jenny would get like, at a restaurant, people would say, well, does she want water? Or what does she want to eat? And Jenny would be like, I don't know. You ask her. Yeah, exactly. So, and then watching, especially as we get more involved with our career together, and watching people sort of treat her like she's just the pianist, and therefore also she's the chief bottle washer. It was just really difficult because that's not how our relationship is. And it was demoralizing for both of us because I didn't want people to think of me that way. And I certainly didn't want people to think of her that way either.
Do you feel like you've transcended that, or is that still a daily struggle?
It's always going to be a daily struggle, especially at the airport.
Yes.
Wow. I think the airport's the worst. I don't know why, but the airport's the worst. But that's just how people are. We just have to continue to try to communicate with people and
educate,
and that's all we can do. So.
I mean, if the little bit that I've heard so far of your music is any indication, it sounds like that you are very effectively doing that. So are you going to do The Girl That I Am, or are you doing another tune for us?
We're going to do a song called Nose Job, which...
I have to hear this.
So the funny story about this was that, I guess my whole life, people have been commenting on my nose. I mean, it started in high school it started earlier than that, when people would say to me that I look like Barbara Streisand, and I would say, well, what do you mean? And they'd say, well, you have the same nose. And then, you know, kids in high school would make fun of my nose, you know, and I didn't really think much about it. I thought, well, I don't mind having a big nose, whatever, that's me, whatever. But... recently, Jenny and I did a concert in San Francisco. This was one of the opera concerts. And the critic, Joshua Cosman, wrote this beautiful article about the concert and what it was going to be, what people would see. And there was a picture of me on the front page of the classical section. You know, and when you're online, anybody can just make comments. And so some woman had written a comment, if she could see, she would have gotten a nose job.
Oh, my God.
And I just thought it was so hilarious. I mean, I was just, Jenny and I were both laughing. We're like, oh, that's, of all things to comment on, she commented on my nose, you know. But just a few weeks before that, when my book had just come out, I was working with a radio producer who wanted me to read some of the book on his show. And so we were exchanging emails back and forth, and then he sent me an audio email at one point, and he professed his love to my nose. He said, I've only fallen in love with two noses in the world, and yours is one of them. And it creeped me out, but I thought, wow, this would be a great, like, let's just, and then we were at Jenny.
I want to know who belongs to the other nose, or whose nose belongs to whom.
Yes, I know, I should ask him, who's the other nose? But the thing is that, you know, Jenny and I were at this residency program in Saratoga, California, and we were supposed to be writing the album at this program. And so Jenny started playing some chords on the guitar, and she's like, why don't we write a silly song with a serious message? You know, again, it was one of those things, I got it, let's write about nose jobs. And it just sort of happened.
I entered my audition feeling pretty and good. I thought that I had nailed it, sang as best as I could. I walked out feeling certain I had gotten the part. But then I got the call that nearly broke my heart. You need a nose job, they said. You should get a nose job. You've got a pretty voice and your figure is great. But you can't expect the leading role until you get that nose job. the Times yesterday. Had a photo on the front page, it made my day. But then I saw the comments in the version online. The very last one promptly changed my mood on a dime. She needs a nose job, it read. That girl needs a nose job. Her story is inspiring, she's accomplished a lot. But she won't get any further if she won't consider getting that nose job. I'm on the way home from the market, it's been a long day. I feel a tap on my arm, I hear someone say hey. I couldn't help but notice just how pretty you are. With your nose, that nose, I shout to stop where you are. I won't get a nose job, I say. I won't get a nose job. It's not me who should change, I won't fit a mold. And Hollywood can make me, and they'll tell you I won't get a nose job. Starts walking away. He says, lady, I've only got just one thing to say. For weeks I've watched you from afar and finally chose to take the time to tell you I'm in love with your nose. So don't get a nose job, he says. Please don't get
You can learn more about Pure Land, buy the single, and see the video at www.pureland.com. Note the hyphen between pure and land. I'm Abby Dees.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Sarah Sweeney, Ryan Pest, Karen Burns, and Abby Dees contributed program material. Thanks also to Steve Pride and to Judd Proctor and Brian Burns. Pure Land performed most of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by a grant from the Yavanna Foundation, a bequest from the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and by our generous listener supporters. You can subscribe to our podcast, find us on iTunes, or get the show on CD. All the info is at thiswayout.org. where you'll also find links to our blog, Facebook, and Google Plus pages. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email TWORadio@AOL.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WOOL Bellows Falls, Vermont, KPFT Houston, Texas, 7LTN Launceston, Tasmania, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.